We come to this place for magic. We come to pop over view, to laugh, to cry, to drink, because we need that, all of us. That indescribable feeling we get when we hit the play button and go somewhere we've never been before. Sound that I can feel. Somehow, heartbreak feels good in a place like this. Not just entertained, but somehow reborn. Together. Pop Poor Review. We make movie podcasts better.
You talking to me? You talking to me? You talking to me? Then who the hell else are you talking? You talking to me?
Welcome back, everyone. If you popped open a beer or poured yourself a glass of wine yet, because you're listening to Pop Poor Review with Jimmy Chico.
Hi.
Kelly Gong.
Hello.
And myself, Matt Chico. We are the movie podcast where we journey through the IMDb top 250 movie list. If you don't have a drink yet, you can try today's inspired drink based off number 126, Taxi Driver. The drink is, you talking to me? Is cranberries. An orange twist, cranberry juice, orange juice, lemon juice, simple syrup, and bourbon.
Is there a slice of cheese on top?
If you want to add a slice of cheese on top, go ahead. Melt it, melt it, and this, and then, you know,
yeah, it's
get
gotta
some
be
texture.
Make sure it's Gouda.
Blue cheese.
Well, technically blue cheese is in drinks with if you put it in the olive. So, number 126, Taxi Driver, 1976. Number 126 at the time of this recording. Director Martin Scorsese, writer Paul Schrader, starring Robert De Niro, IMDb rating 8.2 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes score 89% critics, 93% audiences, Letterboxd 4.2 out of 5, box office 28.3 million and 28.4 million worldwide, adjusted for inflation, it's like around $150 million. Oscars, Best Picture nomination, Best Actor for Robert De Niro nomination, Best Supporting Actress nomination for Jodie Foster, and Best Score nomination. So no wins for Taxi Driver. Jim, let's start with some shotgun facts. Let's start with you.
Okay, hold on. Let me pull those up. Because I actually was looking at it, and I was like, oh, here's one. Okay. So in the diner scene, 12-year-old Iris adds sugar to her toast, which is already covered in jelly. Some viewers interpret that character trait as Iris still being a kid at heart. However, this was not her intention. The other hooker who walks the streets with Iris in the film was an actual prostitute whom Jodie Foster shadowed to prepare for her role. The prostitute, played by Garth Avery, was also a heroin addict, and one way which she would quell her addiction was to add extra sugar to her meals. Jodie, being very young but very observant and intuitive, and an intuitive young actress, incorporated this character trait into the scene.
Now, I know they say it wasn't the intention to be a kid, but the way that, because I read that quote, or that fact, and it makes it sound like she thought, like, did she realize what she was doing with the sugar or no? Because the way they made it sound like, oh, she's a kid and she was intuitive, like, she just picked up that trait. But did she know it was for quelling her heroin addiction?
Well, we will never know.
Well, Jimmy, I need you. You have the shotgun facts, so
but,
I need you to answer.
Yeah, but
answer
Jodi, I DM'd her and she didn't answer back yet.
You reached out for comment?
Yeah, she read left me on read.
The amount of stuff I read for Jodie Foster, I'm like, this girl is 12 years old and she had to go through like a psych eval. I'm like, I give her a lot of credit. She did a really good job for. I was like, it seems like she's literally Jodie Foster, but like the age. Like, to me, she still had the same mannerisms as she does right now.
She still walked the same. She
yeah.
Still spoke the same. But the thing is that it's amazing how much care they put into taking care of her, knowing that she was playing this adult role at the age of 12. Meanwhile, you look at other actresses of the time, Brooke Shields, who is like, what, 10? Maybe 12 when she did, what was that, where she played a child prostitute. What was that movie called?
I know what you're talking about. I don't remember the name of it.
It's actually like, I think it's actually like they consider it like a good movie or whatever. And it's like, when she came out, she's like, yeah, no one gave a fuck that I was playing like a child prostitute because I was Brooke Shields. And it's just like, what a fucking difference. And I think those movies came out around the same time.
But I think, because I was reading, like, you're right. I think they did put a lot of care and also, like, a lot of, like, make sure, like, she felt safe because she
Pretty
also
Baby.
Was Pretty Baby.
What was it?
It's Pretty Baby. It came out in 77, the year after.
Okay.
But I was
Taxi Driver.
I was reading something about, you know, who was going to play Iris. And they had, like, Carrie Fisher was one of the, like, people to do it. Yet, what year was this?
76.
So it was 2 years before they wanted Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher for The Exorcist. Oh, no, or 3 years before. I think they came out in 73. And they were like, no, this is not appropriate for her to be playing, blah, 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 blah. But yet, like 3 years later, like, no, of course you can play a child prostitute. That's totally fine.
Jimmy, it's there's diff the demon and prostitutes are different categories for people.
Another great thing about this film that I love, which I don't know if it's in any of your facts, but I'm going to say it anyway. The city looks so filthy
I know
because it
you
was
love
filmed
that.
during the garbage strike. So they
Yeah,
were just
Jimmy.
like literal garbage.
It did
Jimmy,
help.
do it.
You have to
Okay, I
explain that
love
you love
this.
that.
I love this aesthetic. And I'm watching this and I was
You do
like,
explain the aesthetic.
oh, like garbage city.
Okay, no, 70s gritty city.
No, you like 70s
Like 70s
gritty.
gritty, dirty, gross, like 42nd Street porn theater, like that type of
Child prostitutes.
genre. Prostitutes just walking around the street. Like I love, and then I'm looking, I'm like, there were so many like theaters in the city. Some of them literal theaters, because I saw a poster for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and then some of them just porn theaters. And I was like, what happened to all these theaters?
The porn
Like on
theaters.
42nd
I
Street.
think they became Broadway theater. Like some of them became, I think, like
Did they?
show
Because I
theaters.
saw one of them that said I think the theater where he takes what's her face?
Sybil
Betsy
Shepherd.
too. Sybil Shepherd. I want to say Cecil B. DeMille. Why? I don't know. Sybil Shepherd too. The theater name, I was like, that is a Broadway theater name, and I'm wondering if that turned into a Broadway theater.
I think some of them did. Or at least they turned into like, they might not be like the old ones that like, because Broadway was still going on at that time, but they might have became like newer
They could have been
theaters.
off. There could be off Broadway theaters for all we know.
Yeah. But back to what you were saying about Jodie Foster, she even said like Martin Scorsese had no idea how to direct her because she was a 12-year-old playing a prostitute. But I was like, I also think that helped the role. Like it literally just like let her do what she needed to do and
But
like
she
that.
didn't like act 12. That's the weird part.
She was acting like an adult, but also like a child at the same time. Like the whole scene in the diner, an amazing scene, one of my favorite scenes. But she acted like a kid then. But then if you look at the other ones, she's acting like an adult and like acting like, to be honest, just like Jodie Foster if you saw her now.
I think that it's just Jodie Foster is one of those characters that she's Denzel Wash. She's like Denzel Washington. She plays the same character always, but for some reason it feels different. But like it still fits into every movie that she does. Like it's so weird to explain it, but it's like I just watched, it's really funny because like this is the third Jodie Foster movie I've watched in like the past week and a half. I watched Naiad and then I watched Panic Room and now I watch this one. And she's still like the same person. It's just somehow. She owns the role that she's in so well that she makes it work for whatever type of movie she's in. Because I just named three very different fucking movies. Like, Naiad is like a biographical film, kind of one of those sports uplifting type films. And then you have Panic Room, which is like a
A
straight up
thriller.
thriller. And then we have Taxi Driver, which is a psychological type thriller, but like not for her character. So it's just like, but she's still the same person. I'm like, she still acted the same in all of them, but yet it still works for the film.
No, yeah, you're right. She is like a Denzel Washington.
Exactly. Like Denzel, same fucking guy every single film, yet somehow it fucking works. You know, it's not like Keanu Reeves, who for some reason now can't be in any type of other role besides like an action John Wick role, because every time he's in something else now, it's just like you're just not fitting in here
Feel like
right
Tom
now.
Hanks is like that too. He's like not the Keanu Reeves part, but the Jodie, like more in the Jodie Foster, Denzel Washington. He just says like Tom Hanks in every role, but it's still really good.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like that's the type of like actors that it's like they have something super special. The fact
Yeah.
that it's just like no matter what, they make the role theirs and they still act the same. But it still fits. It's not out of character. It's not out of place.
Was
Like,
this
I
her
don't,
first
so
movie, Jodie
weird.
Foster?
No,
I
she was in that other Martin
don't
Scorsese movie,
know.
the one with Alice something. And I think that came out right
Alice,
before
it
this.
doesn't live here anymore.
Yeah.
No, she was in this movie called Napoleon and Samantha.
Wasn't she in a lot of Disney stuff?
Yeah, this. This is a Disney movie, Napoleon and Samantha. And then she did the Kansas City Bomber.
Okay, so it's not her first role.
No, she isn't. Alice doesn't live here anymore. Okay.
Okay. She is, like Kelly said, she is a diverse actress. She can play Freaky Friday and Taxi Driver all in the same year and pull it off. Kelly, what's your shotgun fact?
My shotgun fact once again has to do with a wig type thing. So
Okay.
I didn't know, but Robert De Niro did not shave his head at the end of this movie. That's a bald cap with the mohawk. That's a bald cap, and that's a really good bald
Were you
cap.
able to tell, or did you read have to read it when you were like,
I
oh
had
my
to read
God?
it. I had to read
Yeah,
it.
wait, hold on, hold on. I think this is the first time Kelly did not know that it was a wig.
Well, because it was good. It was a good bald cap. I've seen really bad bald caps where it's like you could still, like, the shape of the head is so fucking weird that it's like you know that it's a bald cap because when they put it on, it's just like, what are you doing? Like, you could see, like, the hair is, like, all bunched up, still trying to, like, get, like, pop out. Like, for example, the bald cap they put on Millie Bobby Brown in season four of Stranger Things. Like, I could tell it's a bald cap because all of a sudden her head has, like, a weird shape. And it's like, here's her head, but here it's a little elongated and weirdly shaped like an egg because that's where all her hair is currently being
Oh. See, I
pinned
was
down.
curious, Kelly. I was hoping you'd bring this up because when I was watching it, I was like, I just have a weird like feeling. I was like, I don't know. It looks too perfect of a head where I'm like, oh, I mean, it looks like he shaved it, but I'm like, his head looks too round. I wonder if that's like fake or not. But I was like, it looks real. I won't worry about it. And then I was reading it, and I saw it was fake. So I was like, I wonder if Kelly would bring this up. But we
It
the
was, you know, the thing, it was good enough for me. It was
they
good enough.
stumped you.
The actual, like, mohawk part, like, after I went back to rewatch it, that scene for a hot second, I was like, oh, I could see it now. But I was like, that's pretty good for back then. I mean, we just watched Double Indemnity and saw, like, a terrible wig. So it's just kind of
Yeah.
like the evolution of effects. Also, even now here in 2024, we're seeing people with terrible wigs. Sydney Sweeney in Madame Web. Wig!
So mine, Jimmy talked a little bit about this, but mine was that I was astounded by how many different people were considered for like Travis Bickle, Betsy, and Iris. Like Travis Bickle, there was like Jeff Bridges, Jack Nicholson, Dustin Hoffman. I'm not gonna read them all because there's a lot. Christopher Walken, James Caan, Paul Newman, Elliot Gould, Alan Alda. There was just a lot of people. And then for Betsy, there was Jane Seymour, Glenn Close, Meryl Streep, Farrah Fawcett, Barbara Hershey, Liza Minnelli, Sigourney Weaver, Goldie Hawn. And then for Iris, there was Kim Basinger, Ellen Burkin, Gina Davis, Michelle Pfeiffer, Brooke Shields. It's funny that you said that because she was in a movie similar to this. Carrie Fisher, Linda Blair, like you said, and then Melanie Griffith was actually, I think, cast or was gonna. They wanted her. Tippi Hedren said no, and then they
No,
went to,
Tippi Hedren only allows her daughter to be mauled by lions, not play child
and
prostitutes.
then I read that like they also went to Tatum O'Neal, and she refused because she said the role was too small, and she's like, I want to read for Travis, and they're like, no, you're a child. That would just make no sense. And then she's like, did you know I won an Oscar? And I was like, you're what? Like, how old was she when she won an Oscar? That she's like,
She
literally
was like
saying,
she
is
was I
young.
think like 10 or 11.
Imagine just
She's a
watching
Nepo
Taxi
baby. She was a
Driver.
Nepo baby, that's why.
No, I know, but I'm just like thinking, like, imagine they were like, because I don't know, imagine they just said yes to her and she played Travis. And I'm like, that would have been the weirdest movie I think of all time.
Well, let's see, because she acted that way, her career didn't exactly
That's true.
continue into the continue.
But there was just so many people. That's why I was like, I put everything together. It would have been like, it's like three lines of people for each of them. But I just find it funny that they almost had like the Exorcist. I think Linda Blair, that would have been an interesting projection for her. I wonder if that would have like kept her career like on top after the Exorcist, if
I
they would
think
have
it
like
might have because it would have shown.
her
Was I
range.
mean, after The Exorcist, though, she got into like not trouble, but they're like, oh, she's not that good an actress because she didn't do the voice of Pazuzu.
That's not, I mean, that's not.
But the
She, I
people
thought
thought
she.
they did. She almost won the Oscar, and about a week before voting ended, that came out that she didn't do the voice, and
Yeah,
she lost.
but you can't
They
blame her as
said
being an
she was.
actress for that. Like,
They that repaired her career. They said that she was so close to winning that Oscar.
No, I remember that. I'm just saying, like, yes, I can see not winning the Oscar because of it, but to say, like, oh, she's not that good of an actress. I'm like, she's a good actress, and I think this probably would have helped her. It would have been like the because this would have been 3 years later, it would have probably kept her on top. Okay, Jimmy, before let's take a quick break. Before that, let's give us some summary of Taxi Driver.
New York City taxi driver Travis Bickle constantly, almost obsessively, reflects on the ugly corruption of life around him and becomes increasingly disturbed over his own loneliness and alienation. In nearly every phase of his life, he remains a complete outsider, failing to make emotional contact with anyone. Unable to sleep at night, unable to sleep night after night, he haunts the local pornography emporiums to find diversion and begins desperately thinking about an escape from his depressing existence.
And we were going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, dog biters. Mike here, host of the Man Bites Dog podcast. I came here today to give a little promo for our show, but I made the mistake of telling my co-hosts it might be funny if they came in and were mean to me. Well, here's how that went. Hi, I'm Mike Hill, host of the Man Bites Dog podcast, a game show where I ask you,
F you, Mike.
Okay. All right, well, that's unnecessary.
Oh, you're unnecessary.
Okay, it. I'll do the thing later.
What do you want us to say? I was being mean, you f***ing asshole.
All right.
That is true. He was doing what you asked.
Okay, thank you,
Bob. It's not my f***ing problem if you have a f***ing problem with me f***ing talking to you. When you say talk to me, say something mean. I f***ing said something mean, and you're going to be like, I'm going to do it by myself later.
I already deleted everything I wrote. It doesn't matter anymore. Man bites dog. It's a lot like that, except there's less bleeping. And there's a news quiz. Oh, God.
And we're back talking about Taxi Driver number 126, as we always do. Do you think it should be on the list? And do you think 126 is sufficient? Jimmy, we'll start with you.
I think it deserves to be on the list for Robert De Niro's performance alone, but it should be lower. It should be in like the 200s.
Kelly.
To be quite honest, I was gonna say that too. Like, it deserves to be lower in, like, I think the lower 200s, to be honest, like closer to 250. I don't actually like see the appeal of the movie. Like, I don't really understand why people love it so much. I did not like the first act at all. I didn't like it until Jodie Foster's character became more prominent. I just didn't see, like, I think it's the same conversation we had last time where I'm just like, I'm not sure what's so great about it that it deserves to be on this list because I've seen better, like Raging Bull. Like, I love Raging Bull, which came out later than this movie. And like this one, I was just kind of like, eh, you know?
Now, I agree with both of you. I think around 2 to 250 probably is where it should be. But I think there are elements that I think put it on there. Like, I think Robert De Niro's performance. I do think I know it's not his my favorite movie of his, and it's not his best, but like Martin Scorsese did do a good job directing this movie. But it's definitely like I can see it being teetering in and out of the list every once in a while. Like, there was a lot of like reviews too that I saw. It was like either people said it was like amazing or it was like overhyped. So are we all assuming that this might be a little overhyped of a movie?
I believe that it's overhyped of a movie because, again, like I didn't see anything that really stood out about it. Like, I agree that his performance was really good, but I've seen him perform better. And to be honest, the only shining star in this for me was Jodie Foster's character because then it got kind of interesting. Prior to that, I honestly found little to no interest in the story at all.
Jimmy.
I mean, this story, this is, I think, the second or third time I've seen this movie. And I still don't understand the ending. I was very confused. And then I was looking on Letterboxd, and I saw the tagline for the movie, which is, "On every street in every city, there's a nobody who dreams of being a somebody." So then I thought, okay, does he, so he's the nobody, and does his acts at the end of the movie, does that him wanting to be a somebody, either him assassinating the presidential nominee or saving Jodie Foster from being a prostitute and like that life. Like, he, why did he choose one over the other? Confuses me.
What do you mean chose?
Like, why did he, like, he could have just went and tried to save Jodie Foster, but at first he went to the rally to kill the nominee.
That's not true. He tried to save Jodie Foster first when he first went to her into the room. He's like, "I'm here to take you away," and she was like, I don't want to go away." Like, the first time they had a real conversation in that
hotel. But then why did he go to assassinate the nominee? That doesn't.
Well, he kept saying, "I need to do something. I need to do something. I have all the." When he had that conversation with that dude, Wizard or whatever, the other taxi driver outside, he just kept saying, he's like, "I have these violent thoughts, like I have to do something." And I think it is a bit of what you say, where it's like he wanted to matter, but he was also just like, "I have to do something. I don't know. I have to do something that's gonna make a difference, shake up the world somehow, something." It was like he wanted to find an outlet to like get all his feelings out, and he was just like, I think it is like what you say, Jimmy, where it's like he just wanted to get noticed and stuff like that. But I do, like, I don't know. It's like, it is like a weird movie in that sense. Like,
but I also think, like, does this have something to say about PTSD for Vietnam vets?
I didn't get.
Is that a part of the film? Like, they don't really talk about that very much. Then you have the grittiness of the city and his kind of disgust of the people in the city, but he goes to the porn theaters to escape, and he finds that just like a normal, you know, like when he takes Sybil Shepherd to the porn theater instead of, you know, a normal movie theater. Like, I understand he wasn't fully mentally okay, but I was confused as to, like, they didn't explain why.
No, I agree with Jimmy on that also. Like, I didn't feel like they actually did a great job at explaining Travis the character that much, because like literally when he brought her to the porn theater, I was like, what the fuck are you doing? And then he's like, "Well, I didn't know you didn't like this type of movie. I didn't know." And it's just kind of like, what exactly is wrong with him? Because I had read the synopsis and it said, oh, he's a Vietnam War veteran. I was like, okay, like nowhere in the movie do they actually like address that.
Like, they do. They talk about him being in
very,
Vietnam,
very, very briefly.
Yeah, but that's not enough to like for people to like kind of
like what did he do there? Like, what happened to him in Vietnam
that made him that way? Like the connections, like he was lying, the letters he wrote to his parents, if he even actually sent that. He's like lying throughout it, and it's just kind of like they said he was, but they didn't. There's no connection between that and his actions. Like, I feel like we're just supposed to assume it, but it's also just like his actions are super weird.
The story itself for me, or the script, was what like was very kind of like weak, is as in like I didn't see him all of a sudden being like, I saw him, okay, I don't like the city, we have to clean this up, and he was like getting angry, and also there was definitely probably mental issues there. And I read that like Martin Scorsese said, yeah, like he's not all there, and I think that was supposed to like manifest of him just like sort of like disconnecting from the world and like doing things a little differently, but it didn't fully come full circle, I feel like, and nothing really like fit together where it was he went from this city needs to be cleaned up to I'm gonna murder everyone, or wherever I see what I think is injustice of like how this city is dirty, I'm gonna stop the problem. I feel like there was no middleman between that, and like I don't know where that jump started, but I mean I just feel like it was to me, I got more of like he was doing all this because he wasn't all there, he had a PTSD, and also like he just, like, the city was getting him so angry that, like, he thought, like, no one was stopping. So that's why I thought he was going to murder the presidential candidate, because the guy wasn't doing anything to stop it either. And he's like, well, I need to take it in my own hands.
No, I can see where I totally see where you're coming from, and I agree with pretty much everything you said. The connection, like, the more, like, as we're talking about, it's like, this is probably the reason why I didn't care for the movie that much. It really is kind of, like, a weak story in a sense, because the connections between his actions and his background and what we're supposed to kind of assume on our own, it just like didn't work. Because it was just like, we went to like, oh, you know, he has insomnia. They're like, he has chronic insomnia. And it's kind of like, well, we never even attempted to see him sleep. Like, we saw him lay on his bed maybe like once, and then he was sleeping in another scene. So it's just kind of like, what's going on? They're like, as he like has insomnia, he's like starts, you see his mental health deteriorating. And it's kind of like, yes, we see it deteriorate, but we see it deteriorate at a pace that it's just like, how did we get here?
Mm-hmm. It jumped really far.
Yeah, it's just like, I want to save this girl. I like this dude because I'm influenced because the girl that I like this dude. Oh, wait, no, I'm going to kill him. I want all these guns. And because this one dude talked about one gun, now I want to buy all these guns. And I'm just kind of like, first of all, where'd you get all the money? Because you live in a shit apartment. And like, I get it, you're a taxi driver, but I was just like, are you just like not feeding yourself? Are you not buying stuff? Like, how did you afford all those guns? It was just like, the connection was really, really thin. Very thin.
And I feel like they could have done, I mean, I feel like Rob De Niro and Martin Scorsese did try to do as much as they could with a weak script to show all this stuff. And I feel like they could have done more, or maybe the script just could have been better. But I feel like more interactions with him, with kind of like the crazy of New York City, also would have shown the progression of how, like, you have, say, someone like the Martin Scorsese, like, you have someone like less than the Martin Scorsese cameo where he says he wants to like kill his wife or whatever. You have just kind of like a more, I don't know, not that crazy person, and it leads to more crazy. Then you have Martin Scorsese who said, I'm going to kill my wife. She's up there, and he's kind of like, what's going on? And then you have like someone like almost equal to what he is. And then I feel like I could see the progression there if you use kind of the passengers of the taxi cab. But there just wasn't that like through line where I'm like, it's elevating, but it's not elevating as to how extreme we're going.
Yeah, exactly. And because I saw it was like a thriller, I was kind of expecting him. I was kind of weirdly expecting like a twist, like being like, oh, this actually didn't happen. This wasn't happening to him. He was just kind of like, his mental deterioration has been this far that he's kind of imagining things. And it like, it wasn't that. And I was kind of like, I actually think I might have enjoyed it a little bit more if it was kind of that, like he was just imagining, becoming paranoid of all this type of stuff, versus like me not understanding how he got to this point.
Did you read about the theory people have about the ending?
Yeah, that it's a dream.
Yeah, so I'm just gonna, it's a little bit of a long thing, but I'm just gonna read it for like whoever doesn't know. It's like, many critics and fans have speculated that Travis actually died during the climactic shootout, and the scenes where he recovers is thanked by Iris's parents via letter and talks to Betsy when she happens to ride in the taxi by chance are either his dying illusions or pure fantasy. Martin Scorsese and Paul Schrader both provided commentary and denied this theory. Scorsese said that the cab ride with Travis and Betsy is a real event, with Travis's ambiguous look after she leaves the cab indicating uncertainty over his own thoughts. Schrader also added that Travis is not cured after surviving the shootout, and next time he is not going to be the hero. I kind of like the theory better than what they're saying. I feel like if it was all a dream, like, because that's pretty much what he was like. Yes, the city's like was kind of like overrun, and like someone had to fix it, and it was gross. But I feel like it would have worked better of how quickly he escalated if it was truly on his mind, and that was kind of the twist that you're talking about, Kelly, that you were looking for. It's like, it's like you thought all this happened, and like, no, it's just like it was all a dream. And I feel like that would have made, that to me would have made more sense story wise.
Yeah, I mean, and then I was reading that like everyone was super shocked by the violent end, and you know what the thing is, that it's the same thing where it comes with the time. I was like, we have The Departed, who kind of up the ante on the violence and the shockingness. Like, the ending of The Departed, I remember when I watched that and my mouth was open because I was like, they just fucking killed everyone.
Yeah.
I was like, everyone just got shot in the fucking head out of nowhere, and by the person I didn't even expect it to.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of like, that upped it in a way that I was just like, this isn't shocking. So like, it wasn't like, the ending had, like, kind of not as strong as an impact. I guess, like, this is one of those things where it's, like, you have to place yourself in that time. Mm-hmm. But I'm also just, like, it's the 70s. Like, we saw, like, really disgusting shit.
But I think also, like, this is a good movie to show, like, a director who's a good director learning, and like this isn't their best one, but they took this and like learned for better for The Departed, for other movies, and I feel like this was like he did as best as he could for this.
Well, I did like reading the behind the scenes kind of about, you know, they're kind of almost like guerrilla style filming where like they were in the back seat, the sound people were in the trunk, and it's like, but again, this is the positive. It's like that this movie was only made for $1.9 million.
Yeah.
Which it's like to accomplish that, what they have with that little money, it's again, we go back to the same thing that we always talk about. Like, what is it that we're doing wrong now in modern cinema that we need these bloated production values and can't and still struggle to make a movie worth watching?
Yeah. And I remember reading like a lot of like, all the main cast took a huge pay cut because they wanted to make this movie happen and not like just be like, oh, like I want more money because I'm big. Like, I feel like people realize, and I think that's the thing a lot of times now. It's like, yes, the indie films, people take a pay cut, but I feel like even for these bigger films that, you know, it might not happen or be as good unless you like shrink the budget. They're like, no, I you know, I'm still this big actor. I want
but
the
that's,
money.
That's why they do the big budget in movies. So they could make these indie movies for next to nothing.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question now, because I know you guys said that you, or at least I know, Kelly, you said that you liked the Jodie Foster character, and when she came in, the movie progressed a little bit better. Do you think if they expanded her, because that was one of the people, someone's review, they were like, I wish they'd given more space to Iris's character. And I feel like their relationship could have turned into something more interesting, and then the ending still could have been ambiguous, but like I feel like it could have led to something bigger.
No, I don't think they should have, because if you're watching the movie through Travis's point of view, you're not really supposed to know Jodie Foster's character. You're supposed to know she's a 12-year-old prostitute, and that's kind of all you're supposed to know, because like she's supposed to be mysterious. She's supposed to be like, why is she a child prostitute? Where did she come from? Like, why doesn't she want to leave? So expanding that role and his role with her, I feel like it would have just taken away the meaning of what she represented. Because I kind of see, because it's almost like in two parts. It's with Betsy and then it's with Iris. And like his infatuation with these people and not really knowing how to deal with them and how to act around them. So, I mean, I feel like Betsy's part is very short, and you really don't get to know much about her, but you see her, like, you learn with Travis, kind of.
No, I get what you're saying. I just would, but do you think that maybe you could have, because you guys are saying you didn't necessarily understand Travis's progression, that maybe seeing, using Jodie Foster's character from an outside perspective could have helped with that?
I mean, for me, I was about to say, yeah, I would have liked to see their relationship kind of progress. But taking like the couple minutes that Jimmy was just talking, I actually don't agree that it would have, like, I liked her character. And so, like, I'm not going to say that I didn't. I enjoyed it a lot more. But for the purpose of the movie and the purpose of Travis's character, I think that was, like Jimmy said, purposely done, because we're not supposed to understand Travis, like, at all. Like, we don't understand where his mind is going, because that's supposed to be the deterioration of his mental health. Like, we were not supposed to understand. So it's him, like, we're seeing him try so hard with these two women to cultivate a relationship. And it's just kind of like, you don't even know anything about these people, but you're, like, obsessing over them. You have no idea. You're basically stalking them. Because for some reason you think that you have this, you're doing a justice or some sort. Like, you know, he was creepily watching all day Betsy from her job. And then even when he saw Jodie Foster's character, Iris, again, when she was walking down the street, he followed her for like, what, 2-3 blocks, slowly just watching her, not understanding, like, you're being really fucking weird right now. And also takes away from his character, because his character is supposed to be anti-hero slash villain. Like, he's not a hero in any sense of the word, because his actions towards these women have been creepy and stalkerish. So it's like, if they developed a friendship or something, then it's kind of like, people would start sympathizing with him. But I don't think he's a character you're supposed to sympathize with. You're supposed to be confused. You're supposed to be like, what the fuck is wrong with him?
No, and that makes sense. And that's probably why, like, the issues we have are probably intentional of, like, you're not understanding it fully. But I don't, like, you're right. I don't think you're supposed to fully understand anything with him. So it's just like, you know, a snap of a finger, he could switch and, like, the whole story switches. And I think maybe that the controlled chaos of it is supposed to be there, and it just didn't land with us, at least.
No, it didn't, because I know he's supposed to be an isolated character and that's how we're supposed to feel, but I was like, I think they did a little too much to the point where I'm just like, he's so isolated that, like, I can't even begin to understand what he's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I was like, you've cut the character off emotionally too much from me as an audience watching. So, like, I don't care that he died. I don't care about any of this. I'm just, like, thinking in my head, what the fuck is this guy doing?
I think it's because of everything you just said, it kind of has that double-edged sword to choose that path, because mm-hmm. it's either going to go one way or the other. And, like, I get it, and I can appreciate it, and I think that's why I like the acting and the directing better, because I feel like we're trying to do it in a specific way. I just feel like the script maybe is the part that hurt me the most for it, because it makes sense. It's just kind of chaos for it to be chaos.
I mean, it sounds like the script wasn't very, like, descriptive, because, mm-hmm. you know, Robert De Niro, his famous monologue, "You Talking to Me?" Like, that was all ad-libbed, because mm-hmm. he said all it said on the script was Travis looks at the mirror. And it's kind of like, if that's what the whole script was, then it's kind of like, you know, they were all flying by the seat of their pants, and they did a good job acting, but it was just like, I'm lost on, like, how I'm supposed to connect with you as a character.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know. I'm also biased, because I'm not a big fan of Paul Schrader's work. I know I don't know if anyone's other, if you guys have seen First Reformed. It's similar to this, but, like, to the max of it. Like, it just, like, takes whatever, like, I feel like it takes the part that I don't like and, like, amplifies it. So I'm like, I just don't think I'm a fan of his writing, and that's probably why, like, it was a ding on this movie. I saw a review that was like, it was titled, like, "Not a Modern Era Film," and it said, like, "I'm a big fan of Martin Scorsese and Rob De Niro, but to be very honest, I don't like the way they made this movie. I'm watching it in 2020. For this era, we've already gotten other good psychological thrillers." Do you kind of agree with that this didn't necessarily age well?
But no, I don't consider this a psychological thriller.
I don't know why it's categorized as that, a psychological thriller.
Yeah, I'm just reading the review, but I mean, just in general terms of, like,
agree.
Yeah.
I agree. It didn't age well. It's like The Usual Suspects, where, like, been there, seen that, seen it much better.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like Double Indemnity, where it's like, still works today, kind of, you know?
No, I'm in the kind of route where it's like, yes, it's flawed, and it probably did not age well as, like, other movies that I love, but it's still a good movie for me, at least.
Yeah, I just don't understand why people love it so much. Like, why is it considered one of the greatest movies ever? Why do people consider Travis Bickle one of the best anti-hero / villains ever? I'm just kind of like, I just don't get it, and I guess that's just my taste, because I'm just like, I'm lost. Like, I didn't connect with him at all.
A part of me thinks it's, like, the chaos of it. It's just, like, he's very, for a main character, it's just unpredictable. He could have done anything. And I think maybe that's what it was, and maybe people gravitated toward that and enjoyed that aspect. Because, I mean, I feel like you don't get that very often without feeling a little bit of, like, connection with it. And this one was very just, like, isolated, and it's almost like it's literally like you're watching a movie. You just see a character and not really connecting with it. Maybe people liked that aspect because they don't see that often.
I mean, I guess so. Like, there is a chaos to it, but also not a chaos to it. I just mm-hmm. don't know. I guess I just personally don't like his character, and mm-hmm. that's not saying, oh, because he's a bad guy. Like, I have no problems with that. Like, I like villains, like, some of the characters where I'm like, they were a sick fuck, but I loved it. I was just like, he's boring. I don't know.
I did notice that this one wasn't a movie that Thelma Schumacher edited for him. And I was like, I wonder if she does have, like, I wonder if that, like, relationship really is the glue to his rest of his movies. And, like, this one just couldn't find its footing, at least for us, because, like, it was the pacing was a little off and stuff like that. I thought it was very interesting finding out that she wasn't the editor for this one.
Well, had they started collaborating together at this point or no?
I don't think so. That's what I'm saying. Like this is one of the ones that she didn't work on with him. And I usually do find his movies very, like, the pacing I do. It's for me, the pacing isn't a terrible issue normally. This one, I just felt like it was weirdly like slow, but I was engaged with it. But I can tell that it was like a slow movie, and I wasn't sure where we were moving towards. But yeah. I did like the jazz music of going around the taxi cab, and I kind of understood your vibe of liking the 70s, Jimmy. I was like, well, oh, I see it.
Another thing with that I just found out was this was the composer. He did like all the Hitchcock movies. Because when I saw his name in the credits, I was like, is that the one who did all the Hitchcock like opening, like, you know, main music? And then he died like 2 hours after finishing the movie.
But the music was good. The music definitely, I feel like it puts you in the mood, the setting.
It's like
of
a
the
romantic.
Movie.
It's like a romantic. It's a romantic score, which is, it's like a romantic score to the city, which is, sounds weird. Yeah. 42nd Street in the 1970s is like my like favorite time period to watch.
But when they say like the New York City is a character, I feel like this definitely was like that to a T. Like the New York City was its own character in this film.
No, yeah, I agree. Like New York City definitely like played a big part, like especially like just the way it's depicted and the people. It's like it was like lively in its own way. And without that setting, this movie definitely would have fucking bombed.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, it wasn't. Yeah. It was supposed to be in California, and like, but still be a taxi driver. And the Paul Schrader was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna put it in New York because like cab drivers are like a thing in New York. It's like stapled to New York City."
Yeah. No. Definitely. The music was a highlight. The music, I did enjoy the music. But yeah, I just can't get past the other parts. It's really hard for me. It really was hard for me because. It wasn't even like his character was so unpredictable that I was just like, okay, he's making me nervous. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he's going with this. I was just kind of like, oh my God, like, you're so fucking dumb. Like, that's what it was going through my head. I'm like, stupid. It wasn't even like, I'm nervous. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know if he's going to kill these people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to do it. I was just kind of like, he's so stupid.
It had, like, the opposite effect on you. Instead of like saying, like, being nervous about the chaos of it and like unpredictability, you were just like, I just don't care.
I was like, he's definitely going to shoot someone. Like, it's just like, I don't care.
I think now the more I'm thinking about it, because I'm like, oh, I wish they would have like maybe changed this, but then it would have taken away from the vibe that they were trying to do of, you know, not knowing what was going to happen next. But I feel like it's literally, this movie is about whether you like that style or not.
Yeah. I mean, what did you guys think of Travis Bickle as a character? Like, I've talked a lot about him, but did you guys actually enjoy his character? And like, do you understand why people are so attracted to his character in terms of like talking about villains, anti-heroes? Like, I don't get it. I don't
get it. I mean, but I understand the people's love for Robert De Niro's portrayal of Travis Bickle, because he was unbelievable. Like, he became that character. You forgot you were watching De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't understand. I mean, they don't give enough. Like, it's like, I don't want too much backstory with him, but I want something. Like, was he always like this? Did something happen in Vietnam? Like, why did he always become obsessed with like a woman? And then, like, you know, because once Betsy was done, like, then he became obsessed with Iris. Did he have something like, did he have friends? Like, you know, it was just, there was something missing to the character that I wanted I wanted mystery, but I wanted just like a little bit of, you know, like, you know, this is, you know, a main reason why he's like this.
Yeah. It was all, I was like, is he schizophrenic? Like, I'm like,
they said, I remember reading that someone like later in the fight, like a psychologist or something, like, diagnosed what they think he would have had. It was something similar to like schizophrenia or something like that.
I mean, what do you think, Matt? What did you think of Travis as a character?
I agree with you guys are saying, but at the same time, I did like the character because I liked how, like, it could be anyone. Like, it was very, like, real, where it was like, that could be someone in real life. And then I did read about, like, Martin Scorsese was, like, kind of, like, explaining Travis, and he compared it to, like, King Kong and, like, the character Andaro in the movie King Kong, and he was like, King Kong doesn't really understand what he's doing. He's the threatening one, but he's the one that's infatuated with her. And I just thought that was a really interesting comparison. And I get what you're saying. Yes, there was something that I feel like that could have been more with him. But at the same time, I like the aspect of this character did at the same time felt real, because it was kind of like any random person on the street.
I mean, also this character did become like a real person.
Well, I learned that after the movie.
You didn't know that? That's why the guy tried to kill Ronald Reagan?
I always knew the assassination, not the assassination, the attempt.
They did shoot him.
The attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan had something to do with Jodie Foster. And I was always like, why is Jodie Foster in the mix? I'm not a little confused. And I just always heard those two names, like the Ronald Reagan shooting and Jodie Foster. I'm like, okay, I don't know why, but okay, sure. And then I read why, and I'm like, oh, this makes sense. But that's my point. It's kind of like it became like a real thing because it could be. It was just like that element I liked about it. But I agree with you guys.
What I'm going to say right now, Matt, you're not going to like.
Okay.
But the Joker movie also, I think, was almost like a remake of the film, but not a remake. And I thought they did it a little better because they told a little bit more.
Oh, no, I could see that.
Story.
I see that.
And his reasoning to killing at the end made more sense.
No, yeah.
Like,
no,
The big finale made more sense. And, you know, he became somebody when... Like, if just killing some pimps and guys, and like, I feel like he became a hero, and I feel like becoming a hero isn't as, you don't get known more for being a hero than being a villain.
I agree that it's a remake, but I don't know if it necessarily, I don't know which one did it better.
Joker.
To me, I think maybe this one, but I just don't like the Joker, and that might be why. But I mean, like, I guess you're right. I think it's more exciting to become a villain than a hero in a movie, but he did become someone. I don't know really who did it better, but I agree that it's a remake. Yeah.
It's not a remake. I don't consider it a remake. It's a spiritual remake.
I consider it like...
Because it kind of mixes a couple of Martin Scorsese movies, and he was even a producer on Joker. So,
I consider it more of a. I don't love that it's like kind of like a like borrowed, which is like a lot of it was borrowed from it, but that's just me.
I mean, I agree more with Jimmy because, you know, Matt doesn't really like Joker. I love Joker, and I think Joker did it so much better. It's just like kind of like what I said before. Like, with the mental deterioration, it's like, I just didn't see it that much with his character. I just thought he was weird from the beginning. And like with Joker, we see the progression of how he gets there. You know, there are those moments where it's like he doesn't know what's real, what isn't. And it's just like he's the type of person that you don't know what's going to happen. That you're just like, oh my God, I don't. Like when you thought he killed Zazie Beetz' character, but in reality he didn't. And nothing that actually happened with that character ever happened. It's like, that's where I'm just like, okay, this is someone who like needs help. Like, they don't necessarily want to do anything bad, but it's just like they don't know what else to do, and now people are paying attention to him. With here, I'm just like, I don't see how we got here. Like, he was weird from the beginning. Like, there was nothing like, oh, he was up, like, you know, something like, that's the thing, like, he's a Vietnam War vet, so we're supposed to assume PTSD and everything, but it's like, it's not laid out that way. And we don't even get that in the way he's acting. We don't even get it from like him, like being like, oh man, like I can't sleep, I can't do this. Like him thinking about the war, like nothing. We don't get anything. So it's just like, did that actually have an effect on him, or was he always just kind of strange?
I kind of hope that Joker 2 does the same thing like they did with like Martin Scorsese 70s movies, but like with like, I don't know, Thelma and Louise or Natural Born Killers, or there was another one that was just in my head that is not there anymore, but something along the line of that, where it's, you see these two people become even more villainous. Oh, you have the Joker who's a villain, but you see now Harley Quinn become who she is through, like, you know, Thelma and Louise, Natural Born Killers.
It's just like, when it comes to like psychological thrillers or stuff that has to do with mental health, I like to see the deconstruction of someone's psyche. Like, it doesn't have to be like clean or anything, but I like to have like at least a 1, 2, 3, not like a 1, 3, 5. Like, now we're at like 1,000. And I don't see how we even got here. And we're talking about, this is a 2-hour film. This isn't a short film. Mm-hmm. Like, that's enough time to get, you know, a good progression going in. But here it's just like, you're going from weird, 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 still weird, to like maximum, like weird, like fuckery. And then it's just like, and no one cares.
Yeah, because like, to me, this one was was a little too ambiguous with like what they were trying to lay down. And for me, at least, the Joker was too like spoon fed for me. It was like, it was just like, here's everything. And I wish there was just a little, like, both met a little more where it was like your imagination, but also seeing stuff. So I think both of them could have like gone to the middle, but to me, they both were on the like extremes of one side or both sides.
Okay.
So before we move on to the movie grid, I wanted to just, did anyone, when he bought all the snacks at the porno theater, just like clock how cheap it was?
Well, or was it just me? I yes. And then someone I read online, it's like $8.50.
Yeah. It was like $10 for 2024. Cause he kept grabbing things and I was like, wow, to still be just a dollar. What a time to be alive.
But, yeah, but did you see how much it was like per mile? It was like 10 cents per mile for the taxi.
I know, taxi. I was like, is that $3.25 or $325? And then I was like, oh, it's $3.25. Or when even Harvey Keitel's character was like, hey, don't talk about this, and threw him a 20. I'm like, that would be 100 now for anyone to keep their mouth shut.
And he looked, way he looked at it, he's like, oh my God, what did he $20. He just gave me so much money.
And I was like,
well, it was, what was it? How much was it for like 15 minutes with her?
$25?
Somewhere in the 20s,
like, I
think.
I thought it was like $10 for 15 minutes.
Oh, it's 30 minutes for $25.
No, yeah. It was like a deal. You got a deal if you got the half hour.
I feel like it was so funny.
That's been like a thing I always like. I just somehow like zone in on that. Whenever we see the prices in older movies, I'm like, damn. That's
when my inflation calculator comes out and I'm like, oh.
Oh my God, no, that was like when we in Double Indemnity, they're like, she bought this house for like $4,500. And I was like, I want to go back in time because then I would never have to worry about money or work a day in my life.
I know. Ugh, I wish. But I mean, you know, they were dealing with, the city was kind of grimy, so they were dealing with their own things. anyway, moving on, the movie grid game. So top row, we got director M. Night Shyamalan, begins with the one word title. And then on the left side, we have Anya Taylor-Joy, Joaquin Phoenix, Bruce Willis. Well, I mean, I know Anya Taylor-Joy and Night Shyamalan. Isn't that?
It's split, or, a
split
glass.
Or glass.
I feel like glass would be less.
Sure.
Probably. And if everyone, I know everyone, like, if you play this game, you might want to get the highest one. Did, but as I do, but you want to play to get the smallest percentage.
Do you guys ever click on the pictures? Because I always want to see what pictures they use for the actors.
I do that.
I do. There she is.
What?
Oh, no, I can't X out. Okay, there you go.
Okay.
Anya Taylor-Joy, the. I was thinking The Witch.
I was thinking The Menu, but The Witch is probably less. Or it's The Witch.
The Witch?
Or
The Witch.
Or do you want to use that for one word title?
Well, hold on. What has Anya Taylor-Joy been in? You have Menu, you
no,
have
No, she has a lot of one word ones. Do the Witch.
Okay. Do The Witch.
Or The Northman.
Yeah, I was just going to say The Northman.
Do you want me to do that
the
one
witch,
for
The
this?
Witch? No, I think The Witch.
Yeah. Ooh.
That's pretty high. And then you want me to do The Northman for this one? For the one word title?
Yeah, because I feel like everyone's going to do The
Menu. I think a lot of people don't know, remember The Northman that much.
11.7. Joaquin Phoenix, M. Night Shyamalan.
I mean,
is it only Signs?
The Village.
No,
he's
no,
in the village.
Oh, I feel like The Village could be the last one.
Okay, well, Matt, definitely. That's the lower one because Matt didn't even know he was in that movie.
Well, that's why I'm saying I didn't even know.
Oh,
100%. Joaquin Phoenix and begins with the.
All I know is the Joker.
No, it's Joker.
Is it just Joker?
What's
just
the one Joker. Where he's a writer?
Oh, her.
No, there's another one. It's not her. There's another one. I don't remember. But
he's a writer.
I see him, like, they always use the him. He's, like, on a stair. He's, like, outside the house on, like,
the master?
Yeah.
We can do that. We'll do the master. I feel like her would be low, too, for the other one.
Do, like, the master. That's a good movie. Actually, no, it's not. He's just amazing in that.
Ooh, 64.
Oh, man.
Damn.
I'm going to do her. For one word title. Damn. I think they're just also choosing ones that, like, you can't get low on this.
There's one where he plays a cop, and it's a really bad movie, but I can't remember the name of it.
And then Bruce Willis, M. Night Shyamalan.
I think you should put Split.
What?
Or Glass.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, he is. Glass. Oh, he's, like,
he is in Split.
Briefly at the end. So, that's a good one.
8.9. Finally below 10%. Bruce Willis with the...
Oh, God.
The Expendables.
The kid.
The kid. Oh, that, yeah, that would be good.
I love that movie.
7%.
Ooh, okay.
And now just a one more title for Bruce Willis.
So many.
I'm trying to think of ones, like, what did he make, like, the more, like, obscure ones recently? But I can't remember that.
I think those are, like, two word ones.
Is it? Okay.
Red.
That's Red. A good one. Retired and extremely dangerous.
Is it Red in Caps or Red in
Caps?
I think it's the Red in Caps.
Oh, okay.
It's Retired and Extremely Dangerous.
Okay. 19.6. Okay, guys. We got them all. Top 6% still.
Okay. Not... Is it really bad that I forgot Bruce Willis was in The Sixth Sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do like that we were talking about Joker and then that popped up on Movie Grid.
I know.
Anyway, final few things. MVP, LVP, most valuable player, least valuable player. Jimmy, your most valuable player.
Robert De Niro.
Kelly.
Jodie Foster.
I was just going to say the acting in general I liked as a whole. I thought you liked Cybill Shepherd the most, you said.
After rewatching it.
Oh, that was before the rewatch.
That was before I watched it.
Oh.
But she does fucking nothing in this movie.
But I like her because I like The Last Picture Show.
Mm.
Okay, but in this movie.
And apparently she, from what I read, I don't know if you guys read this, she was like apparently forgetting lines and like Martin Scorsese had to like feed it into her ear. So I was like, I don't know. Seems like a lot was going on in that movie.
Interesting.
LVP, least favorite player, Jimmy?
The screenplay.
Kelly?
The screenplay.
I'll be different and I'll go with Harvey Keitel's Red Fingernail. It bothered me so much.
Well,
that was his party now.
I know, but it bothered me. No. Anyway, moving on. Final thing before Jimmy gives his clues. Ratings. I will give this a 7.5.
Kelly?
I'm going to give it a 5. I did not care for this
movie. I was going to give it a 7. 6.5.
Ooh, we are below the 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb. Okay. So I feel like there's like some people who are listening to this but like furious with us. They're like, how can you rate this so low? Jimmy, give us some clues. Close us out.
So some clues for the next one. Let's see.
Dust.
We have a baby Timothée Chalamet. We have a corn.
Shuck and, the musical?
And we have a surprise appearance from, I'm going to say this wrong, Kelly, please correct me, Treesme from the Twilight Breaking Dawn part.
It's Renesmee.
Renesmee?
Treesme? What is that?
I was thinking of, I was almost at Treesme.
I thought you were going to say the other surprise. That's why I was like, when you're like, I'm going to say this wrong. I'm like, how the fuck are you going to say this wrong? I was like, it's a pretty easy name.
Okay.
We should have just.
Renesme.
We should have just played the score as the clues.
No. And then you gave another clue. There's a score.
I know. Okay. We will see you guys next episode for that movie with Renesme. I don't even know who you're talking about for that, but see you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. You can hear us anywhere you listen to podcasts, and we want to hear what you think, so leave us a review. Give us some likes on social media at Pop Horror Review. Click around www.pophorrorreview.com. Become a member of our Patreon page, patreon.com/pophorrorreview, for exclusive content and drink recipes. And one last thing before you go, make sure to check out the Titan Media Collective and Titan Cast Network. Enjoy the rest of your Movie Monday.
That was a Titan Cast episode.